welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into the fascinating, often unseen world of a company that truly underpins modern life. You might not know its name, but its products are everywhere. We're talking about Air Products and Chemicals, Inc., APD, our mission in this deep dive. To peel back the layers of APD's business, understand how it's strategically evolving, and really grasp the high-stakes bet it's making on the future of energy, this isn't just another steady industrial giant you see. It's a company in the midst of a massive transformation, standing right at a strategic crossroads. Okay, let's unpack this.
It really is vital to recognize just how foundational industrial gases are.
Business.
And on the other, an ambitious, highly capital-intensive new frontier that's poised to redefine its future, really.
That duality sounds like a fascinating balance. So let's start with the basics for anyone maybe less familiar. What exactly is Air Products and Chemicals, Inc.? Well, imagine a company that's been around for, over 80 years, operates in about 50 countries, and boasts a market cap exceeding $60 billion. It's truly a cornerstone of the global industrial economy. And when we talk about its product portfolio, it's far more than just gases, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. They produce atmospheric gases like oxygen, nitrogen, argon, mainly using a process called cryogenic air separation.
And just pausing there, think about how essential those are. Manufacturing, critical care, and hospitals. You just can't function without them.
Exactly. Then you have the process gases, hydrogen, helium, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, syngas. And here's a critical point you touched on. APD holds the distinguished position as the world's largest supplier of hydrogen.
World's largest hydrogen supplier. That immediately connects them directly to the future of our energy landscape, right?
Directly. And beyond the gases themselves, they also design and manufacture specialized equipment. Things like air separation units, hydrocarbon recovery systems, transport and storage for cryogenic liquids. It's really an end-to-end operation.
Right, the whole package. And speaking of focus, they recently streamlined things, didn't they? Selling their LNG business.
That's right. The liquefied natural gas business went to Honeywell. That deal closed around September 30, 2024. And it really does sharpen their focus back onto those core industrial gas operations and, crucially, their ambitious clean energy ventures.
Makes sense. Sharpening the focus for the big push.
What's truly remarkable is how foundational these invisible products are. You won't find them on a supermarket shelf, obviously, but they are absolutely critical inputs for dozens of industries. Refining, chemicals, medical applications, food processing, you name it.
And geographically, they're everywhere, basically.
Pretty much. If we look at their fiscal year 2024 revenues, around $12.1 billion consolidated sales, the Americas was the largest slice, followed closely by Asia, then Europe. It clearly showcases the company's truly global reach and, you know, a diversified customer base. Now, when we analyze their business model, it operates on what we often call a barbell effect.
Barbell. Okay, explain that.
So on one side, you have their on-site or contracted sales. This makes up roughly half of their total revenue. What this means is Air Products builds and operates production facilities directly on or right next to a customer's site, supplying gas via dedicated pipelines under incredibly long-term contracts.
How long-term are we talking?
Typically 15 to 20 years. These contracts are really the bedrock of APD's financial stability. They generally include fixed monthly charges or these take-or-pay clauses.
Take-or-pay. Meaning the customer has to pay even if they don't take the full amount.
Exactly. They commit to purchasing a minimum volume, which guarantees revenue for APD. And crucially, these contracts usually have provisions that pass through volatile energy costs directly to the customer.
So APD isn't squeezed if natural gas prices spike, for instance.
Precisely. It effectively insulates a significant portion of APD's profitability from those fluctuations. So you can think of it like a long-term utility contract. Highly predictable, utility-like cash flows.
So it's essentially a stable, almost utility-like revenue stream that just keeps flowing no matter what. That sounds incredibly valuable.
It is. That inherent stability is what allows them to manage greater risk elsewhere. Which brings us to the other side of that barbell, their merchant sales.
Okay, the other end of the bar, what's that involve?
This involves delivering liquid bulk gases via tanker trucks and packaged gases in cylinders to a much broader...
exactly. More exposed to economic cycles and general market fluctuations. So the interplay between these three is absolutely key. The on-site business provides a defensive, reliable stream of cash flow. It supports their capital investments, supports the dividend, even during economic downturns, while the merchant business offers operational leverage and, you know, more upside during periods of robust economic growth.
Got it. So a stable foundation and a growth engine. Understanding this dual structure is really fundamental to assessing APD's
overall earnings quality and their risk profile, right? It's the engine that supports those big bets.
Absolutely fundamental. You can't really understand APD without grasping that structure.
And get this. Industry analysts project robust growth. They expect it to reach between $158 billion and $173 billion by 2030-2033. That implies a compound annual growth rate, a CAGR, of maybe 4% to 7%. This is clearly not a sleepy market.
Definitely not sleepy. It's quite dynamic.
So for you, our listener, what do you think is driving all this growth? It seems like it's coming from multiple angles.
It really is. First, you've got rapid industrialization, especially in regions like Asia Pacific, that just fuels demand across almost all end markets.
More factories, more hospitals, more infrastructure. They all need gases.
Exactly. Second, we're seeing increasing gas intensity in modern manufacturing and healthcare.
Gas intensity, meaning you need more gas per widget produced, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. Or more sophisticated processes that require greater volumes and higher purity gases per unit of output.
Mm.
Think advanced electronics, specialty materials.
And healthcare.
Third, global healthcare expansion, partly driven by aging populations in many parts of the world. More demand for medical oxygen, specialty gases for diagnostics and treatment.
And then there's the big one. The one we keep circling back to.
The big one. The global push for decarbonization and the resulting potentially massive demand for clean hydrogen and carbon capture technologies. That's a huge potential driver going forward.
Right, the energy transition angle. Now, you mentioned the stability from on-site contracts. How resilient is the industry overall?
Well, while demand for those merchant gases is certainly tied to industrial production cycles, the
industrial gas industry as a whole is remarkably resilient compared to many other chemical sectors. And that's largely thanks to those long-term on-site contracts we discussed. They provide that...
barriers to entry that make it incredibly difficult for new players to break in.
What kind of barriers are we talking about?
I can imagine it's not easy to just, you know, set up shop and compete.
Definitely not. First, there's the sheer high capital intensity. Building these large-scale air separation units, ASUs, or... Yeah. It provides massive logistical efficiencies and cost advantages that are nearly impossible for a new entrant to replicate in that region. It's a significant, durable, competitive moat, like owning the highways for essential gases.
A moat, right. Hard to cross. What about technology?
Technologically, the industry relies on well-established processes. Cryogenic air separation for oxygen and nitrogen, steam methane reforming for traditional hydrogen. These are mature technologies. The current wave of innovation is really focused on enhancing production efficiency and, crucially, pioneering entirely new technologies for the energy transition.
Like green hydrogen.
Exactly. large-scale electrolysis for green hydrogen production, and advanced carbon capture systems to make blue hydrogen. That's where a lot of the R&D and engineering focus is now.
And regulations. I assume safety is huge.
Paramount. Safety and environmental regulations govern everything. Production, storage, transportation of high pressure, cryogenics, sometimes hazardous materials. These regulations add another layer of complexity and cost, which further limits competition and solidifies the position of these established players.
Okay, so it's a tough market to crack. Knowing it's this oligopoly, let's properly introduce the other titans and see how Air Products stacks up. First up, Lind Piaik, ticker L-I-N. You said they're the biggest now.
Yeah, after its merger with Praxair, Lind became the world's largest industrial gas company by sales. They have a massive global footprint and are really well regarded for operational excellence. Very disciplined company.
Operational excellence. Okay. And the other one, Air Liquide.
Air Liquide, ticker AI in Paris, the French multinational. Another top-tier competitor, very strong historically in Europe, and also has a growing focus on healthcare and, like APD, the energy transition.
So three giants, and APD's distinct position, you said, is its leadership in hydrogen.
That's right. Being the world's largest producer and supplier of hydrogen is its key differentiator and its primary lever for that clean energy transition we keep talking about. That's their big strategic angle.
And this leads us directly to discussing their moats, those sustainable competitive advantages. You mentioned the pipeline network.
Right, that network density and scale. That 700-plus mile hydrogen pipeline in the Gulf Coast isn't just pipes. It's a system that delivers reliable, cost-effective supply. It's incredibly hard to compete against in established regions.
Hard to replicate. What else builds their moat?
Customer switching costs. Especially for that on-site business. Remember those 15-20-year contracts?
Yeah, very long-term.
The operational risk, the sheer complexity, and the significant capital costs involved in replacing an integrated on-site gas supplier, it's prohibitive for large industrial clients. Once APD is built onto your site, you're pretty much locked in. Switching is a massive headache and expense.
So sticky customers. Makes sense.
Very sticky. And third, technical expertise and those intangible assets. With over 80 years of experience, APD has this deep well of proprietary knowledge, designing, building, operating these incredibly complex, often hazardous gas facilities.
That know-how must be crucial, especially for these new hydrogen projects.
Absolutely critical. The new generation of clean hydrogen megaprojects are technically demanding on a whole new scale. Integrating massive renewable power, electrolysis, carbon capture, global logistics, even a tiny error could have huge consequences. That deep engineering expertise is a major advantage.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, it sounds like the energy transition, despite all its risks, it actually deepens these moats rather than weakening them. That seems counterintuitive.
It does seem that way, but precisely. The sheer scale and complexity of these world-scale green and blue hydrogen projects raise those barriers to entry to an unprecedented level. The capital required, like the $8.4 billion for the InnoM project alone, is accessible to only a tiny handful of global corporations.
Right. Only the giants can play at that scale.
If they successfully execute these projects, APD won't just be a clean energy producer. They'll solidify their position as an owner of critical future hydrogen infrastructure. That could potentially entrench the oligopoly for decades to come.
Wow. Okay, so let's look at how they compare financially. You mentioned some data from around August 2025.
Yeah, let's compare them. Lind, as we said, is clearly the largest by market cap and revenue. No surprise there. But when we look at LTM EBITDA margin, that's the last 12 months earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization margin, a key measure of operational efficiency, APD and Lind are quite superior.
How much better?
Both were sitting around 36% EBITDA margin. Compare that to Air Liquide, which was around 27%. That clearly shows an operational efficiency advantage for APD and Lind over Air Liquide.
Okay, 36% versus 27%. That's a significant difference. What about valuation? How does the market price them?
In terms of valuation multiples, Lind definitely trades at a premium. Its forward price... APD's valuation was lower, around 22.6x forward PE and about 14.0x EBITDA. This appears to reflect a discount for that significant execution risk and the capital uncertainty associated with its ambitious hydrogen strategy.
So the market is basically saying, great potential, but show us the money.
Kind of, yeah. There's a prove-it element baked into the price. However, Air Products does offer the highest dividend yield of the three.
Oh, interesting. How much higher?
APD's yield was around 2.5%. Compare that to Linn's 1.3% and Air Liquid's 1.9%.
So APD gives you more income while you wait for the hydrogen story to play out.
That's one way to look at it. It raises an important question, though. What's the market truly telling us about the balance of risk and reward for each player, especially given APD's bold hydrogen bet versus Linda's perceived steady approach?
That's a great question, and it brings us right into their financial performance. Let's talk numbers. What do APD's recent financials tell us about how it's weathering these big strategic shifts and, you know, global pressures? APD's revenue, it's influenced by four key drivers, right? Volume, price, currency fluctuations, and that energy cost pass-through we discussed.
That's right. Those are the main levers.
For fiscal year 2024, the company reported total sales over $12 billion. But recent quarters have shown a bit of a mixed picture, haven't they?
They have. In Q2 of fiscal 24, for instance, revenue actually dipped year over year. That was mainly due to lower volumes, some weaker merchant demand, and also the effect of lower energy costs pass through.
Right. And it's important to note, as you said, that lower energy pass through reduces reported sales, but it doesn't actually hit their core profit, correct?
Correct. It can actually boost margin percentages,
yeah,
even as it lowers the top line number.
Okay. And more recently, Q3 of fiscal 25.
In Q3 25, revenue saw a slight increase year over year, about 1%. That was driven by higher pricing and favorable currency movements, even though underlying volumes continued to decline somewhat.
Why were volumes still down?
Part of it was the divestiture of that LNG business we mentioned, also some ongoing soft global demand for helium, and the impact of exiting certain smaller projects as part of their strategic pivot.
But the key takeaway seems to be the resilience of their pricing power, supporting margins even with volume challenges.
Absolutely. That pricing component has held up well, which is crucial for profitability. And management is clearly relentlessly focused on margin expansion.
How are they doing on that front?
Pretty well, actually. Back in Q2 FY 2024, their adjusted EBITDA margin impressively surpassed 40%. That was a significant improvement, driven by that strong pricing, diligent cost control, and the margin-enhancing effect of lower energy pass-through revenue.
Over 40% EBITDA margin. That's strong. In Q3 25.
In Q3 FY 2025, adjusted operating income was largely flat year over year. Positive contributions from the stable on-site business, strong pricing in non-helium products, and ongoing productivity gains were somewhat offset.
Offset by what?
By the headwind from selling the LNG business, which contributed profit previously, and that continued softness in the global helium market. The company is also aggressively pursuing a global cost reduction plan. They're targeting nearly $200 million in annual savings.
Are they making progress on that?
They are. About $75 million was already recognized as run rate savings from specific productivity actions they took back in early 2024. So they're actively managing costs.
Now, a truly crucial concept for a capital-intensive business like APD is return on invested capital, or ROIC. What's been happening with that? What is this J-curve concept you've mentioned? Because it sounds like their current investments are having a significant impact.
You're absolutely right to focus on ROIC. It's critical because it measures how efficiently a company is using its capital, all that money tied up in plants and pipelines to generate profits. And for APD, ROIC has been noticeably, well, suppressed lately.
Suppressed? How so?
In Q2 FY 2024, for example, their return on capital employed, or ROCE, which is often used interchangeably with ROIC, was around 11%. They even reported an adjusted figure closer to 13%. But historically, they've aimed higher.
Why has it been suppressed? Just the sheer amount of spending.
Exactly. The company is currently deep in an investment-led phase. They are pouring literally billions of dollars into these large-scale hydrogen projects, projects that are under construction and not yet generating any revenue or profit. This massive spending inflates the invested capital base, that's the denominator in the ROIC calculation, without a corresponding increase in profit, the numerator. So mathematically, it just pushes the ratio down.
Okay. Spending a lot now for returns later.
Precisely. And this period of suppressed returns is exactly what we refer to as a J curve. You see performance dip initially, forming the bottom of that J,
right,
before it's expected to sharply inflect upward as those new capital-intensive assets become fully operational and start generating significant returns. Hopefully.
So the whole thesis rests on navigating that curve successfully.
The entire investment thesis for Air Products, frankly, hinges on the successful execution of this very curve. The new management team knows this. They've explicitly acknowledged the challenge and laid out a clear 5-year roadmap. Their stated goal is to improve ROCE from the current, say, 10-11% level back up to the mid to high teens by 2030 and beyond. This goal directly aligns with that expected J curve trajectory.
Mid to high teens ROAC. That would be a significant improvement.
Yeah.
But it's a massive bet on future profitability, and it's coming at a significant cost to current cash flow, right?
Yeah.
That sounds a tough balancing act.
It absolutely is. Free cash flow, or FCF, has been a key point of concern for both investors and those credit rating agencies. It's simply due to the sheer scale of their capital expenditure program.
How much are they spending?
Capital expenditures, CapEx, are guided to be between $5.0 billion and $5.5 billion for fiscal 2024, and around $5 billion for fiscal 2025. That's a huge amount of money.
Wow, $5 billion a year.
Yeah, and this elevated spending has, as you noted,
resulted in a period of negative free cash flow. Their CapEx has exceeded the cash generated from operations.
And that's why the credit agencies are getting nervous.
That's exactly why rating agencies like...
Okay, this pivot seems crucial. Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Air Products plays this huge bet on being a first mover in clean hydrogen. Let's talk about that ambition in this recent strategic pivot. Their growth strategy for the past several years was really defined by this ambition, wasn't it? To be a first mover and global leader in low and zero carbon hydrogen production.
Absolutely. It drove everything for a while.
And this led to the launch of several multi-billion dollar mega projects. We should probably name them again.
Right. The big ones are the NOOM Green Hydrogen Complex in Saudi Arabia. That's an $8.4 billion joint venture aiming to be the world's largest green ammonia facility. APD is both the primary contractor and the exclusive off-taker for all the ammonia produced.
Exclusive off-taker. That's key. Then there's Louisiana.
The Louisiana Clean Energy Complex in the USA. That was planned as a $4.5 billion blue hydrogen and blue ammonia facility designed to capture over 95% of its CO2 emissions. Huge project.
And one in Canada, too.
And the Alberta Net Zero Hydrogen Complex in Canada, another major blue hydrogen project.
So just massive bets on hydrogen. But the scale caused some jitters.
It did. The immense capital requirements combined with the long-dated uncertain returns of this strategy, it led to significant investor concern. People were asking, can they afford this? When will we see a return?
And that led to the management change.
It culminated in February 2025 with a major management and board overhaul. Eduardo F. Meneses was appointed as the new CEO. This wasn't just routine succession. It was a direct response to shareholder pressure demanding a more balanced approach, balancing growth and returns.
Got it. So the new team came in with a mandate for change.
Exactly. And this new leadership immediately initiated what they've described as a strategic pivot, essentially getting back to basics, as they put it.
Back to basics? What did that involve? Sounds like some tough calls.
It did involve some tough decisions. First, project cancellations. They made the call to exit 3 U.S.-based projects entirely. The most prominent was a planned green hydrogen facility up in Messina, New York.
Why cancel Messina?
The reason they cited was unfavorable economics, partly due to the final rules for the U.S. Clean Hydrogen Production Tax Credit, the 45V credit, and also slower than anticipated development of the regional market demand up there.
So the math just didn't work anymore.
Apparently not. And this decision resulted in a significant pre-tax write-down, potentially up to $3.1 billion, recognized in Q2 of fiscal 2025. A big hit.
Ouch. Okay, so cancellations. What else?
Second, de-risking the major projects that are moving forward, specifically Louisiana. They've delayed that project startup, pushed it back.
Delayed Louisiana.
Oh.
And de-risking how?
They are actively seeking equity partners. They want to sell down stakes in the really capital-intensive parts, the ammonia production unit and the carbon sequestration infrastructure.
So bring in partners to share the cost and the risk.
Exactly. Reduce APD's direct capital outlay significantly. Air Products intends to focus more on its core competency there, producing the blue hydrogen itself and supplying it to its extensive Gulf Coast pipeline network. Let partners handle the downstream ammonia and the CO2 storage.
Makes sense. Focus on what they do best. And the third part of the pivot.
Third, a renewed focus on the core business, emphasizing disciplined investment in their highly profitable sustainable, stable industrial gas operations. Not neglecting the cash cow while chasing the hydrogen rainbow.
Right, don't forget the base business. So it's not a complete abandonment of the hydrogen strategy, but a much more cautious, perhaps more pragmatic approach. Getting the balance right.
Exactly. It's rebalancing. The company's capital allocation framework reflects this new strategy.
Growth, CapEx spending on new projects, it's still the primary use of capital. But the focus has shifted.
Shifted how?
From just maximizing investment volume.
APD has that exceptionally strong track record. They're a member of the S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats Index. That means over 25 consecutive years of increases, and APD has actually done it for over 40 years.
Dividend Aristocrat. That signals reliability.
Huge reliability signal. They returned about $1.6 billion to shareholders via dividends in 2024. And importantly, even amidst all this spending and strategic change, they announced another dividend increase in July
2025, up to $1.79 per share per quarter.
Wow. Raising the dividend even with negative free cash flow.
It signals an absolutely unwavering commitment to the That seems to be the hierarchy. This whole strategic shift is a critical inflection point. The old growth at any cost approach seems to be out. Success for the new team means striking that fine balance, delivering on these ambitious energy transition projects while simultaneously maintaining core business financial health and consistently delivering direct shareholder returns via the dividend.
A very fine balance indeed. Now, since hydrogen is so central to APD's future, let's dedicate a segment specifically to that strategy. Let's zoom in on the hydrogen bed itself. Remind us, what's the difference between blue and green hydrogen, and what's the latest status of these enormous projects?
Absolutely. Understanding the distinction between blue and green hydrogen is really crucial here. Green hydrogen is produced via electrolysis. That's where you use electricity to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. And critically, the electricity used must come from renewable sources, like solar or wind. Because it uses renewable power, this results in a truly zero-carbon production process.
Zero carbon. And NEOM is the big green one.
Exactly. Air Products' flagship green hydrogen project is the massive NEOM Green Hydrogen Complex in Saudi Arabia. That's a joint venture with ACWA Power, a utility developer, and NEOM itself.
Okay, that's green. What about blue?
Blue hydrogen, on the other hand, is produced from natural gas, typically using a process called steam methane reforming, or SMR, which is how most hydrogen is made today. But crucially, for it to be blue, the byproduct carbon dioxide, the CO2, is captured during the process and then permanently sequestered, usually deep underground.
So it captures the CO2 instead of releasing it. Low carbon, but not zero carbon.
Exactly. Low carbon because you're still using natural gas as a feedstock, but much, much lower carbon than traditional gray hydrogen where the CO2 is just vented. APD's key blue hydrogen projects are the Louisiana Clean Energy Complex and the Alberta Net Zero Hydrogen Energy Complex in Canada.
Got it. Green from renewables, blue from gas with capture.
Yeah.
And what's the latest status on these massive projects as of mid-2025? It sounds like they're literally building the tracks for a future energy economy that doesn't quite exist at this scale yet.
That's a perfect way to put it. They are definitely building ahead of their curve. For the NEOM Green Hydrogen Complex in Saudi Arabia again, their largest and most advanced energy transition project construction was reported to be about 80% complete across the entire site.
80% complete. That includes the hydrogen plant, the renewables.
Yeah, the hydrogen facility itself, the massive solar and wind farms needed to power it, and the transmission grid to connect it all. The target is to have the full 4 gigawatts of renewable power generation completed by
mid-2026.
And when does the hydrogen or ammonia actually start flowing?
The first availability of green ammonia for export is expected sometime in 2027.
Certainly some like a huge step in de-risking the project on the supply side, at least.
It is a major step. However, the Louisiana Clean Energy Complex in the USA that planned $4.5 billion blue hydrogen project has faced that strategic revision we talked about.
Right, the de-risking. So its status is...
Its status is now officially delayed. New capital spending was halted back in May 2025 as APD actively seeks to de-risk its investment. The earliest potential startup has been pushed back significantly, maybe to 2028 or 2029, and that's pending the finalization of this new partnership strategy.
And the strategy shift again is?
They're in active discussions to sell equity stakes in the ammonia production and the carbon sequestration parts of the project to outside partners. APD wants to focus just on producing the blue hydrogen and feeding it into its Gulf Coast pipeline network. Let partners handle the rest.
So a leaner capital commitment from APD directly sharing the risk makes sense.
Yeah.
What about Alberta, the Canadian project?
The Alberta Net Zero Hydrogen Complex in Canada, that project is proceeding. Startup is still expected relatively soon, maybe late 2025.
And the offtake there, who's buying that hydrogen?
Management has stated that just about all of it has been committed through customer contracts already.
Oh, okay. So that indicates much lower commercial risk for the Alberta project compared to the others.
Significantly lower commercial risk, yes. The buyers are largely lined up.
Just about all of it sounds promising for Alberta. But for the massive InnoMem and Louisiana projects, that critical piece of the puzzle, who's going to buy all this hydrogen and ammonia, seems to still be a major question mark. This is where the build it and they will come strategy truly gets tested, isn't it?
This raises the truly critical question, the multi-billion dollar question, really. Who is going to buy all this hydrogen and ammonia? The primary risk facing APD's entire hydrogen strategy right now is securing profitable long-term offtake agreements for the massive volumes that these plants will produce. And crucially, as you pointed out, for the NEOM project, despite having the exclusive right to take the ammonia, and for the revised Louisiana project, the company has notably not yet announced any definitive large-scale long-term sales contracts with the end users who will ultimately buy and use the ammonia or hydrogen.
So they have the supply locked down for NEOM, but not the final customers.
Correct. Management has articulated a clear strategy of patience on this. They've stated they will not lock in long-term contracts until they can achieve prices that reflect what they believe is the premium value and first mover status of their real blue and real green hydrogen products.
Hold that for better prices later. That's a high-risk reward approach, really.
Absolutely. It avoids locking in potentially low prices now, especially if the market is still nascent.
But it exposes the company to the significant risk that demand may not materialize fast enough or at the required price points. That could potentially strand billions of dollars in capital if they can't.
So they want partners not just for funding, but for selling too.
It seems so. Finding these offtake partners, these distribution partners, is now a critical top priority for the company, and definitely something investors will be watching like a hawk.
Absolutely. Okay, with such massive projects underway and this offtake uncertainty, you might be wondering about the company's overall financial health and what other risks are lurking. Let's dive into that debt profile and the broader risk picture.
Right. The funding required for these mega projects has, pretty predictably, led to an increase in leverage in debt levels. And that has drawn the keen attention of the credit rating agencies. For instance, back in February 2024, APD issued $2.5 billion in green bonds specifically to help fund its project pipeline.
And what are the rating agencies saying now? You mentioned negative outlooks.
Yes. S&P Global Ratings affirmed APD's A long-term credit rating with a stable outlook as recently as February 2024. However, it's worth noting that in an earlier report from October 2024, S&P had revised its outlook to negative, citing the risk that operating cash flows could fall short of the elevated capital spending, although their base case still expected metrics to remain okay.
So S&P went negative, then back to stable. What about Moody's?
Moody's Investor Service affirmed its A2 long-term rating, which is equivalent to S&P's A, but they revised their outlook to negative from stable more recently in May 2025.
And why did Moody's go negative?
They specifically cited weak credit metrics. They noted a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 3.0x as of March 2025, which is maybe a bit high for their rating category. And they pointed to the negative free cash flow as the primary drivers, expressing uncertainty about the timing of improvement.
So the debt level and the cash burn are the main concerns for Moody's.
Exactly. Management, for their part, remains publicly committed to maintaining a strong A category credit rating. They know how important that is for their cost of capital, especially with ongoing investment needs.
Right. So those negative outlooks are a clear signal of the financial strain these large investments are putting on the company. What about a more comprehensive risk assessment beyond just the debt? Because big projects often come with big, unexpected challenges.
Indeed. Investors really must consider a wide range of risks here. First, and maybe foremost, is project execution risk.
The risk of actually building these things.
Yes. This is arguably the most significant risk facing the company right now. The successful on-time and on-budget completion of these unprecedentedly large and complex projects like NEOM in Louisiana is simply not guaranteed. These are first-of-a-kind, world-scale facilities in many respects.
So delays, cost overruns.
Exactly. Any major delays, significant cost overruns, or operational failures during startup could lead to further material write-downs, like the one they took from Asana, and severely impact future profitability and those hoped-for returns.
Okay. Execution risk is number one. What's next?
Second, commercial and market risk. We've hammered this point, but there's significant uncertainty regarding the timing and, critically, the price at which Air Products can actually sell the outfund from its major hydrogen projects. A failure to secure profitable offtake agreements would essentially strand billions in capital. And separately, remember the merchant portion of their core business, that remains sensitive to broader downturns in global industrial production.
Right, the cyclical part. Okay, execution, market. What else?
Third, regulatory and political risk. This is huge for hydrogen. The economics of these clean hydrogen projects are heavily dependent on government incentives and supportive regulations. Think about the 45V production tax credit in the U.S.
And changes there can kill a project, like Messina showed.
Precisely. Unfavorable changes to these regulations or subsidies can render a project non-viable overnight. Beyond specific hydrogen rules, APD's extensive international footprint also exposes it to broader geopolitical instability, trade disputes, and unanticipated government actions in key jurisdictions, think China, and obviously the Middle East, where NEOM is located.
Geopolitical risk in the Middle East for an $8 billion project. Definitely something to watch.
Absolutely. And fourth, operational and safety risk.
Given the nature of their products handling hazardous materials at scale, this is always a major factor.
High pressures, extreme temperatures, flammable gases.
Exactly. The production and handling of an... Finally, just circling back to financial risk, the company's elevated debt levels and current negative free cash flow profile represent a clear near-term financial risk. While their liquidity seems adequate, they have a large revolving credit facility they can draw on a sustained failure to generate positive cash flow, or a further deterioration in credit metrics could lead to that ratings downgrade we discussed.
And a downgrade means higher borrowing costs.
Higher costs of capital, exactly, which would limit their future financial flexibility at a time when they might still need it.
Okay, a pretty comprehensive list of risks there. So how does the market value all of this complexity? The stable core, the ambitious hydrogen bet, all these risks. Let's talk about APD's valuation and what it means for you, our listener, as a potential investor.
Right, let's try to put a price on it. Comparing APD's valuation multiples to its primary competitors, Lind and Air Liquid, reveals that nuanced picture we touched on earlier. Generally speaking, the major industrial gas players, the big three, trade at a significant premium to the broader materials sector. And that makes sense, right? It reflects their superior profitability, those stable cash flows from the on-site business, and that tight oligopolistic market structure. They're seen as higher quality businesses.
Okay, premium to the sector. But how do they compare within the group? You said Lind gets the highest valuation.
Yes. Within the peer group, Lind commands the highest valuation multiples. That forward PE was around 28.0x, EBITDA around 17.9x. Again, this premium is likely due to its larger scale, industry-leading margins, and that perceived lower-risk strategy focusing on steady execution and maybe more conservative shareholder returns.
Market likes predictability. And APD and Air Liquid.
Air Products and Air Liquid trade at comparable but noticeably lower multiples than Lind. Air Products valuation around 22.6x PE, 14.0x EBITDA, seems to reflect that discount for the significant execution risk and the capital uncertainty tied to its huge hydrogen projects.
So the market is pricing in the current financial strain and the uncertainty, despite the massive long-term potential of hydrogen.
That seems to be exactly what's happening. However, as we noted, APD also offers that higher dividend yield, around 2.5%, that might appeal to income-focused investors who want some return while waiting for the hydrogen story to fully play out, balancing the risk somewhat.
Right. A higher yield is compensation for higher perceived risk. What about historical context? How does APD trade versus its own history?
Historically, Air Products has often traded at a premium to the broader market, consistent with its high-quality industrial business profile. The current multiples are certainly being weighed down by this near-term financial strain caused by the peak investment cycle. So you could argue that any successful de-risking, like finding partners for Louisiana or successful commissioning of its major projects, like NEOM coming online, could serve as a powerful catalyst for the market to re-rate the stock upwards.
Re-rate it closer to its historical premium, or maybe closer to Lind's levels.
Potentially, yes. If they execute well and reduce the perceived risk, the valuation gap could narrow. Furthermore, it's worth remembering that a simple multiples analysis based on current earnings might actually understate the true intrinsic value of the company's vast asset base.
The physical assets. The plants. The pipelines.
Exactly. Air Products owns this huge and in many cases irreplaceable network of industrial infrastructure, production plants, ASUs, SMRs, and yes, that 700-plus mile hydrogen pipeline network in the Gulf Coast. This physical asset base provides a substantial store of inherent value that underpins the company's enterprise value, even if current earnings are temporarily depressed by all this investment spending. It's a hard asset value backstop.
That's a good point. The value of the existing infrastructure is significant.
Yeah.
So wrapping up valuation, what should listeners really watch for as the key drivers and sensitivities moving forward? What are the absolute signposts?
Okay, key things to watch. The primary driver of Air Products' valuation going forward will absolutely be the market's perception of the future returns from its multi-billion dollar hydrogen investments. Is the market buying into the J-curve or not? So the stock's value is highly sensitive to several factors. First, project execution. Any news flow, positive or negative, regarding the on-time, on-budget progress of NEO and Louisiana will move the needle.
Execution updates. Got it. Second,
off-take agreements. This is huge. The announcement of definitive, large-scale, long-term sales contracts for its hydrogen and ammonia output, especially from NEOM, would significantly de-risk the investment case and likely lead to a powerful positive re-rating. That's a major catalyst everyone is waiting for.
Offtake contracts.
Okay.
Third,
the ROIC trajectory. The market will closely monitor the company's progress, quarter by quarter, on executing its five-year plan to improve that return on invested capital back towards the mid to high teens. Are they bending the curve upwards?
Tracking the J-curve in real time. And fourth,
capital discipline. Continued adherence to the new management's more disciplined capital allocation framework. And tangible progress toward achieving positive free cash flow after dividends. Showing they can live within their means again will be key to restoring confidence.
Execution, offtake, ROIC, and cash flow discipline. Those seem like the core metrics. Okay, let's try to tie all this incredible detail together with the ultimate so what for you, our listener. Let's start with the primary investment thesis strengths, what we might call the bull case for Air Products. Why might someone invest?
Okay, the bull case rests on several strong pillars, I think. First, that resilient core business with really robust moats. Remember, roughly half of APD's business is supported by those long-term on-site contracts, take-or-pay clauses, cost pass-through provisions, generating incredibly stable, predictable cash flows. Its competitive position is protected by high barriers to entry, massive capital needs, extensive infrastructure, deep technical expertise that few can match. That core is solid.
Stable core. Check. What else?
Second, a clear first mover advantage in the energy transition, specifically hydrogen. Air Products has committed more capital and is arguably more advanced in the actual construction of world-scale clean hydrogen projects than any competitor right now. If the hydrogen economy develops anywhere near as anticipated, APD is positioned to be a dominant global supplier. That leadership role could drive significant growth in decades.
first mover in hydrogen. Okay, number three.
As a dividend aristocrat with over 40 consecutive years of dividend increases, the company has demonstrated a powerful and consistent commitment to returning capital to shareholders.
Okay, stable core, hydrogen leadership, dividend track record, and new discipline. That's a compelling bull case. Now, for the other side, the bear case. What are the major risks and potential headwinds that could derail this?
On the bear side, you have to start with that unprecedented project execution risk. The company is building multiple first-of-their-kind mega projects simultaneously. The risk of significant cost overruns, major construction delays, or operational failures during startup is substantial. It represents the single greatest threat to the investment thesis, full stop.
Execution risk looms large. Okay, what's next for the bears?
Second, uncertain hydrogen economics and demand. Air Products is essentially building supply ahead of clearly defined bankable demand, especially for Neomum. The ultimate profitability of its hydrogen ventures depends entirely on securing those long-term offtake contracts at favorable prices, prices which, for the largest projects, have not yet materialized. There is a very real risk that the market for green and blue hydrogen develops much more slowly or at lower price points than APD is betting on.
Building it before they are sure they will come. Risky.
Mm-hmm.
Third bear point.
Third, the strained financial profile right now. The massive capital expenditure program has resulted in negative free cash flow and rising debt levels, leading to those negative outlooks from the credit rating agencies. A failure to reverse this trend in the medium term could lead to a credit downgrade, which would increase borrowing costs and limit their financial flexibility down the road. The balance sheet needs repair.
Financial strain.
And fourth, geopolitical and regulatory uncertainty. The company's growth, particularly in hydrogen, is heavily dependent on projects in potentially unstable regions like the Middle East, NEOM, and relies significantly on government subsidies, like the U.S. 45E tax credit. Unfavorable political shifts or regulatory changes in these key areas could materially impact project economics and future growth prospects. The rug could be pulled out.
Okay, execution risk, market uncertainty, financial strain, and political regulatory risk. That's a hefty bear case, too. So what could be the potential catalyst for outperformance that signal a positive turn for APD? What are the specific events that could really move the needle in the bull's favor?
The several key events could definitely signal a positive turn. I think number one would be the signing of major bankable offtake agreements for the ammonia from the AOM project, or for that hydrogen
ammonia from the revised Louisiana project. That would be a monumental de-risking event and likely a powerful positive catalyst for the stock.
Getting those contracts signed. What else?
Successful. As a smart de-risking move.
Okay, those are clear potential positives. So recapping the key metrics for listeners to monitor going forward.
Yeah, to keep tabs on this, you absolutely need to watch the quarterly updates on project status, timelines, and budgets for NEOM, Louisiana, and Alberta. Are they hitting milestones? Watch the return on invested capital, ROIC, and its progress towards that mid to high teens goal. Is the J-curve bending up? Watch the free cash flow trajectory and progress toward that break-even target. Are they controlling spending? Monitor the leverage ratios, specifically net debt to EBITDA, as tracked by the rating agencies. Is the balance sheet improving? And maybe keep an eye on regional merchant volumes as they serve as a good barometer for the health of the core business and the broader global industrial economy.
Great list. And finally, just a quick word on management quality, which seems particularly relevant here given the recent CEO change and strategic pivot. How should we think about the leadership?
Yeah, the assessment of management here is really twofold, isn't it? You had the previous leadership team under CEO Seifi Ghasemi, who delivered strong earnings per share growth for over a decade. But ultimately, they pursued a highly aggressive, capital-intensive strategy that, you know, clearly strained the balance sheet and eventually prompted that shareholder-driven change. High growth, but maybe too much risk towards the end.
And the new team?
The new management team, led by CEO Eduardo Meneses since February 2025, has acted very decisively in its early tenure. The swift decision to exit those three underperforming projects and the move to de-risk the Louisiana complex, it demonstrates a clear commitment to the new mandate of capital discipline and balancing risk and reward.
So good start, decisive actions.
Yes. Their communication to investors has also been clear. They've directly addressed the concerns around ROIC and free cash flow, and they've laid out what seems like a credible, albeit definitely challenging, five-year roadmap to improve these key metrics.
But the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Exactly. The key unknown, as always, is execution. While the early strategic moves seem logical and responsive, the team has yet to prove it can successfully complete the remaining mega projects, especially NEOM, and translate them into the profitable growth that the roadmap promises. The credibility of this new leadership team will ultimately be built, or perhaps broken, on its ability to deliver these incredibly complex projects while simultaneously strengthening the company's financial foundation. It's a huge task.
What an incredible deep dive. We've really journeyed from understanding Air Products' essential, yet often invisible, core industrial gas business, which truly underpins so much of modern industry, all the way to its ambitious, incredibly high-stakes pivot into the clean hydrogen economy. It's clearly a company with deep roots and a very bold vision for the future, navigating a truly fascinating strategic crossroads right now. So what stands out to you, our listener, after hearing all this? What further questions does it spark for you? Here's a final provocative thought to leave you with. Consider just how fundamental the production and distribution of these industrial gases truly are to everything around us. Then, try to imagine a world increasingly powered by green and blue hydrogen. What kind of entirely new infrastructure, what new global partnerships and supply chains would need to emerge to make that a large-scale reality? And based on what we've discussed, who might be best positioned to actually build it?
It really is a compelling intersection of established critical industry and potentially future-defining technology. Understanding complex companies like Air Products offers such a unique lens into the profound global industrial shifts and energy transitions that are happening.